We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome in, everybody, to another installment of Fielding the 68 here on the Field of 68 Media Network, brought to you by Rhythm. I'm Faxon Childress here with a couple of the best Brads in the industry. Brad Wachtel on my left, Brad Evans on my right. It's going to be a fun one today, fellas. We've got the bracket reveal going on, top 16 overall seeds. Brad Wachtel, we'll start with you. How you feeling, man? March is the best month of the year. Should be a fun episode today.
I'm feeling great. I mean, this is why we all do it. You know, leading up to this week, we're into conference tournaments now. We got Selection Sunday right around the corner. Cannot wait. The last couple of days, there's not a whole lot of movement going on because a lot of the at-large teams are not playing. But now, all of a sudden, starting tonight into tomorrow, the fun begins.
And Brad Evans, you got the Fighting Illini shirt on. Excited about Illinois trending towards March. I mean, you got to be pretty fired up.
Yeah, I'm extraordinarily fired up. I just hope they don't screw it up in Minneapolis and get back and maybe a third opportunity to take down Purdue. Of course, that would have to happen in the Big Ten title game. But looking like a rare Final Four contender out of Champaign. So I'm really geared up for that. And honestly, guys, if I'm at all distracted during the show today, it's because I'm sweating out like five bets at once right now.
Hey, nope, we've all been there. Can't blame you. Sometimes that's going to take the priority. As we get into our bracket reveal, let's kick it off and get things just started with a bang. Rip off the Band-Aid. Number one seeds. Some usual suspects going to be in the number one seeds as we take a look. Purdue, Midwest Region, UConn, East Region, Houston, South Region, and Tennessee West Region. Let's just go quick initial reactions. Brad Evans, we can start with you. A little surprised to see Tennessee getting that final number one overall seed over North Carolina?
No, honestly, that's how I have it right now. I mean, they're on very thin ice to secure that final number one seed, and you can make a very strong argument that North Carolina, who beat them earlier this season, should usurp them on that line. But the difference for me is pretty simple. The SEC, just a stronger overall conference, more rough, more rugged overall. As a result, Tennessee, number 10 overall in strength of schedule, non-con strength of schedule, slightly higher than North Carolina. Carolina 22 in that category. Tennessee at number 16. They look at Carolina, number 25 overall in strength of schedule. It's not like they played a bunch of patsies, but I think who you played, and obviously they both have 8 quarter one victories, no bad losses on the resume. It's just the slightest of advantages to the Volunteers, but zero margin for error, really, I think, for both these respective schools in their conference tournament exercises, whether being the ACC for Carolina or the SEC for the Volunteers.
And Brad Wachtel, anything to add to that on the Tennessee versus UNC front? We're getting down to the nitty gritty, and these conference tournaments could end up determining who gets that final number one spot.
No question. And for me, I agree with everything Brad said. I mean, Tennessee has 9 wins over the field compared to North Carolina's 6. If you go, you know, block by block against how they did against these quadrants, Tennessee has the better resume. But you know what? It's not always about the better resume. If you remember back when the top 16 reveal came out a few weeks ago, North Carolina was actually pegged ahead of Tennessee. Since that top 16 reveal came out, North Carolina has not lost, okay? Now, I know Tennessee has garnered some big-time victories for sure, but Carolina won at Duke. So, for me, it's really 50-50. I know for a lot of people, maybe it's they feel pretty good about Tennessee, but I think it's really close and can go either way. And I think these first couple games in the conference tournaments could have a role in what happens.
Yeah.
The conference tournaments, I mean, we're really just spoiled with what all's going on right now. This is the best time of the year. This is why we play, is what they say. This is why bracketology people play. This is why we keep up with it all year. We want to see who's going to get these final number one seeds. And transitioning into number two seeds now, North Carolina is going to head those four of the number two overall seeds. Arizona, Marquette, and Creighton rounding out the final number two seeds. Tar Heels would be in the East region, Arizona in the West. And then you've got Marquette, of course, in the Midwest region and Creighton in the South. Brad Wachtel, we can start with you this time. Initial reactions to the number two seeds.
I don't have a problem with it. You know, obviously, as we just spoke about Tennessee and North Carolina, that could go potentially either way right now. But I would say Iowa State is still firmly in the mix for a two seed. The interesting part, you know, Creighton's been awesome these last few weeks. They played extremely well, very deserving. They have 15 wins over quadrant one and two opponents. The only teams that have more wins than that are Purdue, UConn, and Houston, and they're the three best teams, you know, that are going to be seeded in the NCAA tournament. Now, the question is with Marquette. You know, obviously Tyler Kolek has been injured these past couple games. He's not going to be playing tomorrow when they probably face Villanova, which is a huge game in itself. So the committee is going to have an interesting time figuring out, how do we seed Marquette? Is Tyler Kolek going to play in the NCAA tournament? Is he going to play in the Big East tournament? Right now, we don't know that answer. If I'm Marquette and I know that he could be out for a little while, I'm not revealing that to anybody because I don't want my seed to be affected. There's nothing wrong with that. It's just a little gamesmanship. So I think that those five teams, so really you got Creighton, Marquette, Iowa State, and then Arizona, and then it could be Tennessee or Carolina. I think Baylor is still potentially in the mix. Other than that, I don't see anybody else cracking that line. I'm pretty happy with what we got right there.
Brad Evans, anything to add to that regarding the number two seeds?
No, I think the more handsome Brad absolutely nailed it. No question about it. In my estimation, is exactly how I have it shaken out of the bracket big board right now on thegamingjuice.com. I got it the order as it stands. North Carolina, Arizona, Marquette, and Creighton. And Wachtel nailed it perfectly. You know, what does the committee do with Tyler Kolek? I don't think we're going to see him at all in the Big East tournament, nor should we. I think Shaka Smart's going to play this smartly and rest his star point guard because we all know – got to have strong guard play if you're going to make a deep run in the NCAA tournament. Make sure that he is right. Make sure that he is at or near full strength because they have the goods to make a deep run in the main exercise, tip it off here in just over a week. So, it will be fascinating, whether the cloak is pulled off at some point and, Tyler Kolek does return in this Big East tournament. But I think they're really solidified as a number two seed. And I have Creighton just recently. I moved them up to a number two over Iowa State. And I agree with Wachtel. Iowa State, the Cyclones, very much still in that number two seed conversation. But it's a small pool to choose from. And I think when things really shake out, pending what occurs in the Big East tournament and respectively to the Big 12 tournament with Iowa State, I think it's going to be in this exact order with Carolina, Zona, Marquette, and Creighton.
Yeah, it's always so interesting to see how the selection committee handles these injury situations, especially down the stretch during the season. Something I saw earlier today that I thought was pretty interesting, Jeff Borzello tweeted out that Charles McClelland, NCAA Tournament Selection Committee Chair, was asked about Indiana State on a call with reporters, and he specifically name-dropped that Jason Kent missed the loss to Southern Illinois and most of the loss to Illinois State. I personally found that really intriguing, which makes me think that, hey, maybe Marquette gets the benefit of the doubt regardless of whether Kolek plays or not regarding that number two seed.
Yeah, so honestly, it also speaks I'll jump in real quick. It also speaks to Indiana State, right? Like the fact that he actually knew player names and was citing them. They marquee guy out of action that may sway our opinion on whether or not Indiana State is going to be in or out. All I want is this, guys. I love Robbie Avila. I love his just general sexiness, his ability to splash from outside, his post-up moves. Not the greatest defender. We all could agree to that. But he's a joy. He's a guy that needs to be on the big stage in March Madness. I don't think Indiana State, where the bracketology at, should be in the at-large conversation because of that devastating loss to Illinois State. But, you know, the committee chair citing and name-dropping Kent's name and saying that was impactful and influential and why that L was acquired. Maybe they get the benefit of the doubt in the end, and the Sycamores, the fighting Larry Birds, do indeed dance come Selection Sunday, and I think we all love to see it.
Yeah, I personally really want to see the Sycamores in the dance. I think everybody wants to see it. Everybody's kind of fallen in love with Indiana State. So, you know, bracketology cap, if it's on, probably not in the dance. The bias in me and the heart in me that wants to watch them play on the big stage, put them in the dance, yes. Man. Come on. Put them in
yes.
the dance. As we move things forward to our number three seeds, some intriguing stuff here and also some names that have been in the two seed conversations. Got the Baylor Bears in the Midwest region, the Iowa State Cyclones in the West region, Kansas Jayhawks, if we're talking about injuries, they've been decimated just as much as anybody in the country, and then the Duke Blue Devils rounding things out in the South region. Brad Evans, we'll go back to you first on this one. Initial reactions to the number three seeds.
Yeah, I mean, Baylor, obviously very deserving. Iowa State, you can make the argument, as Wachtel and I both did, that they could be in the two-seed conversation there in the end. You know, the one disagreement I have is, what the hell do we do with KU, right? I mean, Kansas, they're the walking wounded right now. Hunter Dickinson, you know, Bill Self saying, hey, we're hoped to have him for the NCAA tournament, but I think that's far from a guarantee. McCullers, you know, bone bruise in his knee continues to flare up, and that is going to be problematic. You look at the advanced analytics, and, you know, Kansas, God, man, they've looked like a D2 school at times. They're north of number 200 EFG offense, EFG defense over the last month and a half, and I think they're going to get waxed tonight. I really do, by Cincinnati, a team that is very much on the outside looking in, but could maybe crawl their way back into the bubble conversation with a convincing and emphatic W in KC. So we'll have to see how it shakes out tonight. But if Kansas goes down and goes down convincingly, they need me moving down the projected seed as well from a 3 to a 4. Hell, they could land as a number 5 here in the end, even though they have played the number 1 hardest strength of schedule of anybody in the country.
Wachtel, throwing things to you, I'll kind of steal Brad Evans' comment. I mean, what the hell do we do with KU?
It's really difficult. You know, like you said, the committee chair came out and said, look, we're judging all these teams. We know the injuries that happen all over the country, whether it's a high-profile team or not. I mean, Kansas has two significant injuries, and I agree with Evans. I think Cincinnati's going to beat Kansas tonight. Cincinnati's favored to beat Kansas tonight, and they have a lot to play for, and Kansas just needs to get healthy for the NCAA tournament. So there's so many question marks that surround Kansas, and, you know, quite frankly, I don't think the committee will know what to do. But like Evan said, you know, look, right now, Kansas, for me, they're my bottom three seed at the moment. They lose to Cincinnati today. There's a team knocking on the door right now, which for me is actually Duke. I have Kentucky as a three seed. So I have my current three seeds, just so we're aware, Baylor, Kentucky, Kansas, and Duke. Kansas and Creighton. But I think Duke is knocking on the door to replace Kansas with so much up in the air. There's no question that that's a possibility. And then we'll talk about the four seeds very shortly.
Yeah, transitioning things, we could just throw it right to the four seeds. Some familiar names, and Brad Evans' boys on the four line. Kentucky in the South region, Illinois in the West region, the Crimson Tide and Nate Oates in the East region, and then the Auburn Tigers in the Midwest region. Wachtel, we'll stay with you for these four seeds before we throw it to Brad to talk about his Fighting Illini. You had Kentucky on the three line. They're on the four line here. What's going on with the Wildcats?
Yeah, so if you look at Kentucky's resume, I mean, they've actually been, you know, they've been volatile. They've been unbelievable in certain games and very underwhelming in other games. But if you look at their resume, they're 5-2 against Q1A opponents, which is an unbelievable record. You know, I don't care where you're seated. That is an excellent record. And you start lining them up against other teams that are in their seed vicinity, whether it's Baylor, who's 4-7. Kansas is under 500. Duke's under 500 with only 2 wins. Auburn's 1-4. Alabama's 1-8 against Q1A. I mean, that's pretty strong for me. So that's why I kind of gave them the edge at the moment to be there. The one interesting part about the top 16 rounding out the four seeds, when we saw what the selection committee gave us a few weeks ago, right now I think we can all agree that 15 out of the 16 teams which are there right now, we feel pretty good about. As Brad Evans mentioned, you know, Kansas is still a little bit of a question mark. I don't think I see them dropping worse than a four. But right now, the only team that has dropped out of the top 16 since that reveal is San Diego State, and they've lost multiple times since that happened. So I don't think any of us have any, you know, gripes with them not being in it at the moment. And I'm sure Brad would love to talk about his fight in Illini.
Oh, yeah, who, me? ILL? What are you talking about?
Hey, man, you have the floor. Talk about the Fighting Illini.
Look, I will say this about Illinois. You know, they're a team that is certainly well-equipped to make a deep run in the NCAA tournament. I don't care what line they're on. Could maybe play their way up to a number three seed. We'll see how things shake out in Minneapolis in the Big Ten tournament. Could have a bit of a trap game, whether it's against Iowa or Ohio State, and they're – first appearance in that exercise. But let's say hypothetically they make it all the way to the title game, and I don't know if Wachtel agrees with me on this, but I feel the Big Ten title game doesn't matter at all really in the seeding process, because it's the last game before the selection committee show. I think they have set and vet and scrubbed the field so damn much. They're tired. They're exhausted. The pizza box is empty. The coffee's run out, and they're like, we're just going to, you know, run with what we have. We don't care what happens in the Big Ten finals. So, you know, if Illinois makes a title game, I think they're going to play themselves up to a number three. We'll see what happens with the likes of Baylor and Duke and Kentucky in their respective tournaments. But that is still very much in play. Kansas, I have on the four seed line. I have Alabama there. And I have BYU. Really impressed me today against UCF. And I think UCF just, you know, shot the daylights out the night before in the second half. They, you know, coasted back down to reality. And then BYU just went in and plucked that low-hanging fruit as a result. But a team that's really firing on all cylinders right now. They've got some impressive road wins. They've been, you know, consistently for the last at least 3-4 weeks inside the top 20 and in the overall net. A pretty strong overall strength of schedule. They have transitioned seamlessly to the Big 12, and they have the 6 quarter-one wins to boot as well. So very impressive overall resume. So Illinois, Kansas, Alabama, BYU on my four seed line right now. But of course, so many more games to play, and hopefully my boys show up there in the land of 10,000 lakes and drown everybody.
It'll be interesting to see what transpires with the Fighting Illini. And hey, I'm always for a pro BYU shout out. Mark Pope doing a great job out in Provo. Top 10 in adjusted offense on KenPom. So they really can get hot. And man, they'll shoot the lights out of the gym in a hurry. Going to take a quick break now on Field in the 68. Up next, region reveals. Won't want to move a muscle. Stick with us.
The best month of the year is here, which is why you need to know that we are now partnered with BetMGM. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for the listeners and the viewers of the Field of 68 throughout the conference and NCAA tournament. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, you can use the bonus code FIELD150 and you'll get $150 in free bets on your first wager with BetMGM, regardless of whether or not that bet hits. Here's how you make it work. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using the bonus code FIELD150. Deposit at least $5 and place your first wager on any game, and you get $150 in free bets regardless of the outcome. Just make sure you use that bonus code FIELD150 when you sign up. And most importantly, we have some fun stuff coming up for the conference tournaments and for the NCAA tournament. Bet insurance tokens, college hoops, odds boosts, and what I love the most, a nice little parlay boost, as well as a ridiculous array of prop bets for anything that you could possibly imagine betting on in March and in early April. BetMGM is the king of the prop bet. So go download the BetMGM app, use Field 150 is the code, and sign up today. And while I've got you here, a quick request. The best way to support the Field of 68 content that you get here for absolutely free is to engage with it. Rate and review the podcast. Like and share YouTube videos. Tell your friends about us. It all helps in a world where the algorithm is king. And now, back to our show.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome back in to Field in the 68, brought to you by Rhythm on the Field of 68 Media Network. I'm Faxon Childress here with Brad Wachtel and Brad Evans. Just talked a lot of seeding. We revealed our ones, our twos, our threes, and our fours. And it's now time for our region reveals, where we're going to start in the Midwest. I'm really interested to see some of these matchups. I know you guys are as well, so let's get right into it. Midwest region have Purdue at the one seed at the very top. Texas and Florida Atlantic, there might be a billion points scored in that 8-9 hypothetical. Auburn and Samford, Clemson and the winner of Texas A&M and Colorado, and then you got Baylor and Morehead State. Utah State and Drake is the 6-11 matchup. That would be another great game. Gonzaga and Virginia, and then Marquette and Colgate to close things out in the 2-15 matchup. Brad Wachtel, we can start with you. Just what stands out the most in this Midwest region to you?
Well, number one, anytime you see a team that, well, like a 6-11 game, you would kind of prefer to see a team from a non-major conference play a team that's a mid-major. In this matchup, we don't get that. We get Utah State and Drake, two phenomenal teams. And I actually think that Drake was a team and is a team before they beat Indiana State. I actually thought that they had a better case for an at-large bid than Indiana State, because if you remember, they have a common opponent to Utah State. So Drake beat Nevada on a neutral court. Nevada is currently the hottest team in the Mountain West Conference. So right away, that matchup to me would be the most intriguing matchup. And I think that one could literally go either way. Just like a lot of these 5-12, 6-11 matchups, I'd be extremely excited to see that one. And then looking at other potential matchups, obviously, you know, looking at who we selected as the last four teams in, Texas A&M playing Colorado, don't have a problem with either of those teams in right now. But again, we're looking at 12-5 matchups. It could go either way. There's no, that's not an upset anymore. We know that. Like the 12 seeds, I know the last few years, maybe the 5 seeds have picked it up recently, but those matchups can go either way. So what I love to see is so many unbelievably strong matchups that, you know, if you're filling out a bracket, I don't care if you are a knowledgeable fan or if you're a first time bracket filler outer, it's going to be, it could go either way.
It really could go either way. Brad Evans, is there any team here that stands out to you? And also, to expand on that, what team out of this bracket could potentially improve their seeding the most before Selection Sunday?
Yeah, pull the graphic back up so I can see the full field there that is projected. You know, the one that could really improve, I think, their overall standing is Auburn. I think they're a little bit overseeded here as a number four seed. I haven't projected as number five, but I don't know what the heck to do with that team, to be honest with you. They got the gaudy net ranking. It's a top six overall. Strength of schedule pretty handsome there at number 69. But they're just 1-7 against quarter one opponents. No bad losses on resume. A mediocre 5-5 record straight up away from Auburn. But, you know, a team that I just don't really know how it's going to shape up and, you know, shake out when it's all said and done. Again, I'm guessing a 5 seed. I think a 4 is a little bit rich for my blood, but a team that we know that can certainly rev the engine, one of the fastest teams in the country, an outstanding team defensively. I've had some offensive ills, are north of number 100 in effective field goal percentage offense on the year, and a fascinating matchup there in that 4-13 with Samford that can absolutely light it up and will joyfully, willingly run with the Auburn Tigers. So, you know, if you're looking for maybe a glass slipper to be donned, it could be with Samford in the opening round. And I also love the 7-10 game in that region to boot. I think Gonzaga is a team, even though they were humbled last night by St. Mary's, got the best of them in 2 or 3 games this year. They're playing at such a high level offensively. Graham Ike just got in foul trouble schematically, really changed the entire concept of the game for Mark Few. But, man, that team is getting buckets. They are sopping wet here in the last about month and a half. They're top 5 in the nation, effective field goal percentage offense. And, you know, it's all about draw, and that would be an attractive draw for them, especially if Tyler Kolick for Marquette is the number 2 seed, isn't the healthiest. We've seen a lot of either 7 or 10 seeds. I think it's like 14 last 16 tournaments. Not only win in the first round, but march on to at least another round and maybe even taste some sweetness in the end.
Yeah, some high upside out of the 7 and 10 in that region for sure. And I love the Buckyball shout out for the Samford Bulldogs. If you guys don't know who Samford is yet, they just won the SoCon. They went through Mercer. They beat the defending champs in Furman. They press pretty much the whole game. They jack a million threes, and they have some incredible athletes and shooters. That team is going to be super fun to watch in March for sure. Transitioning forward now to our next region to reveal, the West region. This one's going to be intriguing. A lot of big names going to be on the board here as we take a look. Tennessee, the number 1 seed out West. Boise State and Oklahoma, the 8-9 matchup. The Fighting Illini, there you go, Brad. Got Vermont in the first round. South Carolina versus Grand Canyon in a little bit of a rematch. They actually played in the non-con. Iowa State and Oakland, the 3-14. St. Mary's versus the winner of Mississippi State and Rick Pitino's St. John's team. And then you got Texas Tech, Dajan's team, our producer, Seton Hall, and then Arizona and Montana, the 2-15 matchup. Brad Evans, we'll come to you first since you're Fighting Illini in this region. How would you feel for your boys if you got Vermont as the 4 seed in the West region? Do you like that draw?
This is a wet dream, guys, of a region, to be honest with you. This is unbelievable. Please make this happen, basketball gods. I'm just speaking as a University of Illinois alum and fan and diehard, and speaking as objectively as humanly possible, this is a perfect draw for Illinois. Obviously, they lost to Tennessee at their place earlier this season. They were competitive in that game. Could be a rematch scenario there in the Sweet 16. I'm totally here for it because I think Illinois, second go around in a neutral court environment, could get the best of Volunteers. And Arizona's got their own ills. I mean, how do you lose to USC? How do you lose on the road to Oregon freaking State? It happened because Arizona defensively has some warts. Offensively, a team that can absolutely, you know, malfunction scoreboards. There's no question about that. But there really isn't a frightful path anywhere else, whether looking at the bottom half of the bracket or the rest at the top half for my Fighting Illini. I would confidently put them in as objectively and as unbiased as I can in the Final Four representing this region in Glendale.
Wow. So Brad Evans, very high on the Fighting Illini in this region. Wachtel, we'll throw it to you. Just give us the rundown on your thoughts on this region, then maybe you can go back and forth a little bit with Brad if you're not as high on the Fighting Illini as he is.
Absolutely. If you could just pull up the bracket one more time so I could see it. I know right offhand, for me, what I'd be circling is St. John's. I would love their path right here. And I think St. John's, if you would go back to the beginning of the season, how many people had St. John's in their top 25? They've been a disappointment this season, but that's okay. They are still right there. We don't even know if they're going to be in the NCAA tournament. Depending on their results against Seton Hall, I mean, which is a monumental game for them that I'm sure we'll get to later. We don't know if they're going to be there, but if they do get there, you cannot discount Rick Pitino. You cannot discount the ceiling that this team has. For me, you got St. John's against Mississippi State, potentially Iowa State, Arizona. We know, like Brad Evans has just spoken about how poorly they've been against in head-scratching matchups. I think they can make a run here. So if I'm St. John's and that's my region, I would love it. And then in terms of Illinois, I really like Illinois. You know, as a non-biased fan, I love them. I think they do a lot of things well. The problem for me, and when you're looking at, you know, as a bracketologist, when you're looking at their overall resume, they just don't have enough of the high-quality, top-tier wins. You know, their best win of the season, you can make an argument, it's at Wisconsin, Florida Atlantic, Michigan State. I mean, the wins are just not there. So, unfortunately, we haven't seen it, but I do think that their ceiling is extremely high. So, if they get the right matchups, there's no question they can make a deep run.
Yeah, it's really going to be interesting to see if they actually do get into the big dance. I'll be rooting for Rick Pitino and St. John's. Top 40 in KenPom adjusted offense and defense. It's very clearly a complete team, but they're finally starting to play as a complete team, rattling off those five wins in a row. I mean, at one point, this team was 14-12 and 6-9 in league play, which, given the preseason expectations, was pretty hard to wrap everyone's head around. I think we're finally starting to see the true colors of this team bleed through, and we'll see if they can run it all the way into a potential Cinderella run in March. Going to take a quick break on Fielding the 68, brought to you by Rhythm. More up next on the Field of 68 Media Network.
There is nothing better in sports than tournament time, which is why I need to tell you guys about our partners over at Rhythm. If you're into sports betting, you need Rhythm, the place for data-backed props and picks. For those that are unfamiliar, Rhythm, spelled R-I-T-H-M-M, is the go-to mobile app for player props and game picks. Backed by AI predictive models, Rhythm helps you make smarter and faster betting decisions across all sports, but particularly college basketball. With Rhythm, you get data-backed picks for every single Division I game every single day. Users get free picks daily with the ability to upgrade to unlimited access. If you want to increase your edge and win more bets, go to the link in the description and download Rhythm today. That's R-I-T-H-M-M, the place for data-backed props and picks. And while we're here, let me tell you about our newest partner for the month of March, Splash Sports, the home of certified community competition, where you get to play against your friends and not the house. Whatever game it is that you are playing, from Survivors to Tears to Pick X, the safest way to play for real money without the hassle of having to track down deposits or worry about payments is through Splash. They have partnered with PaySafe, the best deposit and payment system in the world, to ensure that money stays in safe hands and is delivered to the right places. To join the Field of 68 Survivor Madness, click the link in our profile below and join in. Entries are $5 a pop with a prize pool of up to $4,500. Winner take all. Join Splash and come prove that you're smarter than us.
Welcome back in to Fielding the 68, brought to you by Rhythm. Facts and Childress here alongside Brad Wachtel and Brad Evans. Been talking bracketology, been doing our full bracket reveal, which is going to continue as we now take things into the East region. Should be some pretty intriguing matchups here. We got two sides of the bracket down, two to go. Here's the East region: UConn, the one seed, Northwestern and Colorado State matching up at the 8-9. Nate Oates and Alabama playing against UC Irvine, the Anteaters in that 4-13 matchup. BYU on the 5 line against Richmond, Kansas a 3 against Toledo, Nevada and Princeton, that would be a really good game in the 6-11, Washington State and Michigan State at the 7-10, and then North Carolina as the 2 seed getting Quinnipiac. We'll start with you, Brad Evans. What's the most intriguing matchup to you on the screen right now? Is there anything you would have circled headed into this hypothetical East region?
Oh, man, I would circle it. I would highlight it. I would scroll it in blood. Nevada, guys. You know, a team I think is going to win that opening round matchup against Princeton. But not only that, they'll knock off Kansas, assuming KU can get past Toledo. Not only that, they can get further into this region and maybe even represent it in the Final Four. Yes, I've been drinking tequila since 6 a.m. I said Nevada to the Final Four. They're playing an extraordinarily high level. One that's been a top 25 Bartorvik team since February 1st. And over that span as well, they're inside the top 20 EFG offense, inside the top 75 in EFG defense. What has impressed me most, though, about Nevada, 8-3 straight up in row neutral environments. And on top of that, it's all about guard play. And they got guards in Blackshear and Jared Lucas have really ratcheted up their level of play. So if you're looking for a sleeper, if you're looking for mid-seed Rip Van Winkle, it's not a Cinderella. Get out of here. You got to be at least a 12 seed to be a Cinderella. 6 seed does not count. the Nevada Wolfpack, the Fighting Steve Alfords, are a team to watch. And if they were blessed with such a region, I'm going to be at all shocked if they represented in Glendale.
That's a bold call there from Brad Evans. But, hey, I mean, 39% plus in conference play, top of the Mountain West from beyond the arc. This team can shoot the basketball. They can beat you in a multitude of ways, and they guard at a high level when they're engaged. Throwing it to you, Wachtel, are you as all in on the Wolfpack as Evans is, or are you going to say pump the brakes a little bit?
I don't think I would take him to the Final Four, but I love Nevada too. I'm 1,000% behind him. I would take them to the Sweet 16 in this region. No questions asked. That would be easy for me. If they could get through Princeton first, I think Princeton could be their toughest matchup. But look, Princeton right now is a team with a top 40 strength of record. We know what they did last year. You know, they're just as good, if not better than last year. I mean, they lost their best player, but they've been unbelievable. They just haven't had the quality wins. They haven't had the opportunity to get the quality wins. It's extremely hard and extremely difficult for a team like Princeton to put together a quality schedule. So for their sake, getting an at-large bid isn't going to happen, but they're still going to be potentially an 11 seed, and look what that's done for them. So yeah, so that's number one. Number two, I would say, look, UConn, just take a pen, jot them in, put them into the Elite Eight, okay? Easy. No questions asked about that. I would love to see a UConn-North Carolina matchup. It's hard to win back-to-back national championships, and I know UConn is one of the favorites, if not the favorite. I don't know what the exact odds are offhand, but the bottom line is it's hard to repeat. So as many people that are going to take UConn to win the national championship again, and personally, I would do that right now. Let's look at the matchups, and I think that North Carolina game could be a potential tough matchup for UConn in their quest to win back-to-back titles.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if Hurley can get it done. And back-to-back titles in this day and age seems absolutely crazy. Evans, you're a gambling guy. I want to throw it to you for this. What's the hypothetical over-under if Alabama and BYU were to run into each other like they very much could in the hypothetical region?
I'm going to say like 180.5, but no, screw that. Tack on like three zeros. It's going to be ridiculous. It may, you know, reestablish records of scoring output in a single college basketball game. It would be otherworldly. I'm here for it. Take my money now. Let's get that. It's set in stone and make sure we can all sit and watch it while we're sipping on the love juice and you know, getting blitz in the process.
Yeah, just throw me a BYU-Alabama matchup in the second round, and I don't really even care what the line is, over. If you're betting the under in that game, you're a coward. You got to bet the over in that game between those two teams.
Amen.
Transitioning things now to the South region as we reveal our final region of the bracket. Some names have been left out from the first three, and there's Houston, final number one seed. McNeese State currently leads the Southland Championship at halftime by 16 points. It'll be interesting to see how Will Wade's bunch is seeded. They could be on the 13 line. Kentucky right there. San Diego State versus South Florida in the 5-12. Duke and College Charleston against Pat Kelsey in the 3-14. Dayton and James Madison. Man, James Madison's been impressive. That win-loss is no joke. Wisconsin and TCU, and then Creighton and Sam Houston State to round things out. Wachtel, we'll go to you first here. What sticks out in the South region?
Right off the bat, I would say you look at the 7-10 matchup between Wisconsin and TCU. Wisconsin is just not the same team that they once were. They built up their resume in non-conference play. They played well at the beginning of Big Ten play. They're not the same. Now, granted, TCU hasn't been particularly great of late either. But I'm taking TCU in that game. A TCU-Creighton game for me would be an unbelievable matchup. I think TCU is one of those teams that is a little, I'm not going to say they're going to be underseeded or overseeded or whatever. I think they're right where they should be. But I think they're a team that could make a run. I think Creighton would be a tough matchup there. The other matchup I do like, and I think so many people are going to pick James Madison. I really do. I think, you know, coming off a 31-win season, now you're playing do we want to call them a mid-major? We don't. Atlantic 10 is not a mid-major conference. But Dayton is a team that I don't think will scare James Madison. James Madison won at Michigan State earlier in the season. I think they're out to prove themselves. I think they know that they would not have been in that large bid if they did not win their conference tournament. So I think they're going to come in with a bit of a vendetta, and they're going to come out and say, like, nobody actually believed we should be here. Well, guess what? Here we go. 30 and 3, 31 and 3. Bring it. Bring anybody you want.
Brad Evans, throwing that to you now on the James Madison front. Nation's longest active win streak at 13. I mean, Mark Byington's got them playing unbelievable basketball. Could this be a draw where they could potentially not win one, but multiple games?
Yeah, there could be taste and sweetness because their ability to jack a great equalizer in the three, and they've done it with amazing success really here in the last couple of months and really the entire season. Obviously, you know, they start off the season with a bang, with a win in East Lansing against Michigan State. Should be a dancing team in their own right. But yeah, I mean, you do not want to face James Madison at all in your region, whether they're 11 seed, whether they're going to be a 12 seed or a 13. They're going to be a tough draw just because their ability to splash buckets, in particular from outside, and with Bickerstaff inside, they have a pretty strong post presence. I will say this, guys, my favorite matchup in this entire region. You were talking about the Alabama scenario against BYU. How about the over-under on Kentucky McNeese? You might have to, like, hold my beer, Alabama, for a second, because that thing may be like 200.5. It would be utterly insane and ridiculous, and I would love every single second of the game. It could be like a 120 to 100 finish, pending what version defensively we're going to see from Kentucky. All I need is B+, and if that happens, the rest of the tournament, they're going to cash in me a winning ticket at 35-1 to cut down nets in Glendale.
Yeah, I think that this bracket might have some of the most tantalizing matchups out of all of them. Wachtel, throwing things back to you, a team that a lot of people are high on because the metrics are good, and when you watch them play, it's like, wow, this is a really good basketball team. Florida and Nebraska. If Florida ends up on the 8 line, are they a team that's capable of beating a number one seed?
I don't think they would beat Houston. I'll put that out there right now. Don't love that matchup for them. Any other one seed? I could see them going toe to toe with UConn. I really can. I really like Florida. I mean, they can score the basketball, and you know, like they're even Nebraska. I mean, Nebraska. The problem with Nebraska and what they've done is the majority, if not all, of their big wins came at home. So they haven't really proven themselves away from home to have the ability to beat a quality team. But Nebraska's explosive too. When they get hot, like, look out. So I think that matchup in itself could be a big time matchup to look at, but I don't see either of those teams beating Houston in their style of play, unfortunately.
Yeah, I feel like Houston is, I don't want to say the least fun of the one seeds with their play style, but I think we're just so spoiled with the way that the other three one seeds are playing right now offensively. And Houston just sucks the life out of you, man. They don't care if they win ugly. Yeah. They just want to win, and they get the job done. Evans, going back to you, anything to add from this South region from a matchup perspective or any other team you wanted to hit on before we throw it to break?
Yeah. Go ahead and pull up the graphic again, guys, so I can look at all the various matchups in this region. One that really stands out to me that is of interest here, you know, you mentioned Florida, Nebraska. You know, I think the one with San Diego State and South Florida is quite intriguing because San Diego State has been moving in the wrong direction. South Florida, a team that's grossly overachieved all season long, don't really have any quality resume wins on their overall profile, but you know, a team that you shouldn't really sleep on. They just have found ways to win, and San Diego State is basically like one solid player in, you know, Jade Ladee, who's a wide body and an absolute freak, gets it done around the post and just brutalizes you with the mid-range game and backing dudes down, getting some of those second chance opportunities. But I'd be very intrigued if that matchup were to actually play out in real time as San Diego State and South Florida. So that's the only one I will throw out there. And Duke, I got to root against them. Go Charleston. Great town. They splash threes, and I'm sick of Filipowski and his supposed fake injuries.
That's some bold stuff there from Evans, but hey, when you're Duke, you're the villain. You got to embrace it. You got to live with it, and you got to move
That's
on.
Right.
Final segment of Fielding the 68 up next on the other side, brought to you by Rhythm. You're watching the Field of 68 Media Network.
By now, you guys have surely heard about Autograph, an app founded by Tom Brady with the intention of disrupting the way that fans consume content covering their favorite teams. This is how the app works. All of the podcasters, bloggers, and digital creators covering a team have their content sent to that team's page in the Autograph app. Instead of having to bounce from site to site or trying to navigate the safer workspaces on Twitter, you can just scroll through Autograph. This isn't a hard sell. This is the truth. I am a UConn fan, and I use the Autograph app to keep up with the writers I read and the pods that I listen to about UConn basketball. The best part is that every piece of content that you consume gives you reward points. The more you get, the more chances you have at things like discounted tickets to games and the grand prize, a trip to the LA Regional and a spot in a suite for the Sweet 16 and Elite Eight games. Here's the best part. We've partnered with Autograph to donate $1 to the V Foundation every time someone downloads the app using the code F68, with a minimum of $2,500 getting donated. The app is free. So download, use the code F68, help us raise a little bit of money for cancer research, and give Autograph a try. I promise you it will be worth it. And while we're here, a quick reminder, make sure that you subscribe to The Daily. We have new landing pages with deep dives into each coaching change, as well as a tracker that provides scouting reports on the transfers that have entered the portal that you are going to want to know about. Hit the link below to subscribe.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome back in to Feeling the 68, brought to you by Rhythm, Fax and Childress, alongside Brad Wachtel and Brad Evans. Full bracket reveal today on the program, and man, oh man, I just hope that this is the bracket with some of the matchups that we're getting. McNeese State versus Kentucky, Alabama versus BYU. Yes. It's an over-betters dream. Let's just call it how it is. It's an over-betters dream in this hypothetical, and it would make for some insane matchups based on what we have seen so far. Going to take a quick look now at our consensus last four buys here at Field of 68 as we take a quick look. TCU, Seton Hall, Michigan State, and Virginia. Three-bid ACC is still a very real possibility if the Cavaliers slip up against the winner of the Clemson and Boston College game tonight at 9:30. Wachtel, we'll throw to you first. Of these four teams in the last four byes, do you think any could potentially fall out of the Field of 68 come Selection Sunday?
The team that stands out for me right there is Virginia. I currently have them as one of my last four teams in. There's a lot to be concerned about with Virginia. They're just 2-6 against quad one opponents. They're under 500 against Q1 and two. Just one significant victory on the season. That did come at Clemson, which is a big win. They have three wins over the field. Now, the two strong things that they have going for them, they don't have a bad loss, which some might say, okay, no big deal. But when you're a bubble team, the committee is looking at everything, and a lot of bubble teams have at least one bad loss or one bad loss. So that's something that sticks out for Virginia, which is a positive. And then just their overall result-based metrics. Right now, they average out to 34, and if you're a bubble team, that's a strong number. But by no means are they a lock. It would not surprise me if they ended up out of the field on Selection Sunday, especially if they lose their first game. And I know they will likely get Clemson. And I think there's a great chance that they lose that game. And if they lose that game, now we got to see what's going on with the rest of the bubble. And they're now really in the mix with all these other teams. And you're trying to figure out what stands out. And I think the committee is saying, you know what? Every game that Virginia lost this season was by double digits. They're just non-competitive.
Yeah.
You know, they're really going to nitpick these teams. So for me, Virginia is the one that stands out as not a lock to get into the field.
Yeah, Tony Bennett's Cavaliers almost falling now outside the top 200 in adjusted offense on KenPom. Our top 10, as always, with that pack line and adjusted defense, but dead last in the entire country in tempo offensively. We talk about BYU and Alabama, teams we want to watch play in March. Hey, I'm an ACC guy, but I'm not sure I want to watch this Virginia team play in March. Evans, we'll throw it to you. I mean, talk to me a little bit about the Cavaliers and the dangers that they face against this matchup, who we expect to be against Clemson.
Yeah, I mean, it's problematic for them. And, you know, Wachtel is 100% right. I have him as a member of my last four in on the bracket big board on thegamingjuice.com. And there's, you know, very little margin for error. I will say this in a hypothetical. Guys, what if we got a Virginia St. Mary's first round matchup? Is it like first to 35 wins? I mean, you would talk about a slow pace. I mean, Galapagos Tortoises will be like, man, come on, can we speed it up here a little bit, guys? I mean, it's like utterly ridiculous. But that's a scenario that could play out with St. Mary's likely to be, you know, straddling that 6-7 line. And if Virginia, if they make it, probably going to be an 11 seed. Though they're going to have to, you know, potentially avoid Dayton. So, yeah, I mean, Virginia's in right now. They got warts. They got, you know, visible ills. I don't want to see them in the tournament because their style of play is hideous. It's disgusting. You're right. They haven't been really competitive against high-level competition for the most part. They've gotten blown out. They've gotten annihilated in some cases. This is not the usual Tony Bennett teams that we've seen here in the last about 5-10 years. So, yeah, Virginia got work to do in the ACC tournament. They are almost in a must win against the Clemson Tigers coming up here tomorrow.
Yeah, and we said 200.5 is the hypothetical for McNeese State, Kentucky. St. Mary's, Virginia might be 100.5. That seriously might be the first one to 50.
Cut it in half! Cut it in half!
Yeah, I don't think you have another choice at that point. I think you got to cut it in half and just live with the results if you are the odds makers in Vegas. Going to transition now to our last four in. Should be some very interesting names here. And if you're a fan of any of these teams, you're obviously glued to the computer. Mississippi State, St. John's, Texas A&M, and then Colorado as the last team in. We talked a little bit about Rick Pitino. Haven't talked a lot about Buzz Williams and what they're doing in College Station. Evans, we'll throw things back to you. What sticks out amongst the last four in?
Yeah, I mean, Mississippi State, I think St. John's, and not to a certain extent Colorado, safer in for me than the last four right now. I've got Mississippi State as a very low-end number 10 seed. St. John's is the highest number 11 seed in Colorado. A member of the first four, so technically a member of the last four in, but more safely so compared to other teams. I don't have Texas A&M in. And the gripe that I have with the resume is this. Let me give you all the nitty-gritty. Number 47 overall in the net, 18 and 13 overall. Number 17 in terms of strength of schedule, outstanding there. Number 21 in non-con, strength of schedule, also outstanding. 6-6, okay, respectable there in true road games, 2-2 in neutral. 5-6 against quarter one, okay, bravo, well done. And then it gets ugly because you're 2-4 against quadrant threes. 2-4. So you have four black eyes, visible dents right now on the overall resume. I don't know if they can you know, survive that. Texas A&M, one of many teams, most notably those other teams in the Big East tournament. There's like three or four. They got a whole lot of work to do. But the Aggies have got to win a game and maybe two to solidify their stance and get off that spongy ground ahead of Selection Sunday begin because of all of those black eyes they have on the resume.
Yeah, and every time I've watched the Aggies over the course of the season, I'm like, man, can anybody on this team shoot? I mean, they're almost dead last in the country in three-point percentage. They are 360th in three-point percentage at 27.8%. Just not a fun three-point shooting team to watch. We talked about BYU and Alabama, all the threes that would be going up. That would not be a similar type game with A&M and what Buzz Williams has done down in College Station. Wachtel, throwing things to you now. We talked about St. John's extensively earlier. As far as Mississippi State and Colorado go, do either of those two teams talk to me a little bit about the Buffaloes and the Bulldogs?
So in terms of Mississippi State, they get LSU as their first matchup. For me, I think if they beat LSU, they should be in the field. If they lose, they're in trouble. They're in trouble, and now they're at the whims of seeing how the rest of the bubble performs. Colorado is one of those teams. Their resume isn't overly impressive at all, but they have solid metrics across the board. They don't have a bad loss, so their average result-based metrics comes to about 38, which is pretty solid. You know, they have a win over Washington State, and then they beat, you know, a team that are close to the bubble, Utah. You know, maybe Oregon, not overly impressive at all. They don't have any major, major quality wins. They are 9-9 against quad one and two opponents, which is a solid record. Not a great non-conference strength of schedule. I don't think they're safe. They are in my field as well, just because, look, when you compare them to other resumes, they have less warts on their resume. One thing I wanted to add about Texas A&M, though, while I agree with many of the things Evan said about them, the one thing about their resume, a positive that stands out, they are 11-9 against quadrant one and quadrant two opponents, okay? 11-9, two games over 500. A high major team has never been left out of the field that's been at least two games over 500 against Q1 and Q2 opponents. Now, I know quadrants haven't been around for that long, but so we're only going with a few-year history, but that's something to take note of. And the other part, the four bad losses, no question, not particularly good. A team with four bad losses has also received an at-large bid for the NCAA tournament, Arizona State, a couple of years back, and they were in, you know, in Dayton. So I think in terms of Texas A&M, and, you know, we've focused on them a lot. You know, when you look at who Texas A&M has to face in the SEC tournament, if they can win their first round matchup and they play Ole Miss, who they just played and just waxed at Ole Miss, they can win that matchup. I'm going to feel pretty good. I'm not going to say that they would need to beat Kentucky. Obviously, if they beat Kentucky, they're in my opinion. But I think if they could have a competitive showing against Kentucky, they're going to be right there. And again, everything that we mentioned with the bubble, saying who's in, who's out, everything also depends on how all these other teams that do. So nothing is ever definitive.
Yeah, I think that's some great points, Wachtel, as well. And just so much stuff going on the bubble right now, and so many games left to be played in conference tournaments. Some of these teams have a chance to play their way in. Some of these teams have a chance to play their way out. As you mentioned, for Mississippi State, you can't lose to LSU. It's really just straight up that simple. And there are going to be a lot of people who would be jaded by that loss and say they don't deserve to be in the field of 68 if they do drop a game, knowing the stakes. So that'll be really interesting to watch in the SEC tournament. Now people on the outside looking in, our first four out going to reveal that. Should be some pretty interesting names here, and man, oh man, me and Evans are heartbroken. Put Indiana State in the dance. They're the first team out and fielding the 68's first four out. New Mexico, the Lobos following right up, then Villanova and Iowa. Evans, I'll throw this to you on the Indiana State tangent, man. I know that the bracketology hats that we put on, they say that they probably shouldn't be in, but this team is just so, so fun, and they would be so fun to watch in the big dance.
Yeah, they would. And you wonder how much of the human element is really going to come in to play here in the selection committee room. Obviously, you're going to geek out and dissect all the various resumes and look at all the advanced analytics that Wachtel and I analyze every single day and ascertain whether a team should be in or out. But visually, Indiana State is just outstanding. I mean, one of the best offensive teams in the country. They're top 10 in effective field goal percentage offense over the entirety of the season. They're top 10 in two-point percentage offense. They're top 10 in three-point percentage offense. They get buckets. They are the antithesis of Virginia and St. Mary's, and I want to see that. And I wanted them to get an opportunity against a mighty opponent in foe, whether it's in Dayton. And if they were to win that game and march on and maybe as an 11 seed or a 12 seed in a six matchup or a five matchup, I just want to see them have a chance to shine because, again, America needs Robbie Avila on March Madness. He's a dream, and he needs to make more NIL cash because I'm sure he's going to have college debts to pay.
Wachtel, throwing that to you. I'm fully in agreement. For what it's worth with Evans. I'm backing that sentiment 100% of the time. But Wachtel, regarding the other three teams outside of Indiana State, New Mexico is specifically intriguing to me because it's a team that, once again, the eye test says, hey, this is a pretty good basketball team that's probably supposed to be in the NCAA tournament, but they've got some resume flaws that are holding them back.
Yeah, no question. And they open up Missouri, the Mountain West Conference tournament against Air Force. Obviously, that's a must-win game. They've already lost to Air Force. So got to get that one out of the way. And then if they win that game, they'll get Boise State, who's going to be an at-large team. I think they're going to need to win that game. As you mentioned, they have a lot of strengths. They have a lot of flaws. They're 28 net. You look at that net and you're like, oh, they should be in the field. I think many of us thought that they were on their way to being a no-doubter, a no-brainer a few weeks ago. Then that loss came, that Q4 loss at home, and just kind of derailed them. They're just 2-7 against Q1 opponents, 6-8 against quad 1-2 with that Q4 loss. Their non-conference strength of schedule is just 266. And the thing that stands up the most, though, about their resume is their 71 strength of record. You know, that is awful. That is awful. Yeah. You know, and as a reference, last year, the worst strength of record to get in that large bid was Pittsburgh. And I believe they were 54. So 71 is really, really bad. So I think for sure they're going to need to win two, and then we're going to have to reevaluate and see where that puts them. As far as the other bubble team, the other teams that are on the outside looking in, you know, a team like Villanova, they're another team that could work their way back into the conversation. They play Big East tournament tonight against DePaul. Obviously a must win. You know, that's just like playing a bye game, you know, or in early November. Got to win that game. Got to win that game. But should win that game by a ton. After that, they get an intriguing matchup against Marquette, who will be without Tyler Kolek. So if they could beat Marquette, Villanova suddenly could finish 19-15, four games over 500 with wins over North Carolina on a neutral court, Texas Tech on a neutral court, at Creighton, and Marquette. It's going to be hard to leave that team out of the field, even with their three quadrant three losses. But I think there's even more teams back at the end of the bubble that still have an opportunity to fight their way back in. And these first couple days of the conference tournament when they play could change some things for sure.
Yeah, some great points as always, Wachtel. And Villanova, man, they've proven they can hang with the top dogs in the country, but that it's just such a polarizing team when you've got a team, and it feels like there's one every year that has quality wins that are really, really good, and then quality losses that you're just like, man, what in the world happened? So I think that's Villanova this year, and we'll see if they can play their way into the dance. Final score in the Mountain West tournament before we start to wrap things up on Fielding the 68, 72-62, Nico Medved and Colorado State get it done, an 11-3 run to close the game, and beat San Diego State, a team that lost four of their last seven in the regular season, had floundered a little bit. But I think with that win, they're more than likely in the field of 68. So that's good for the Mountain West. It's good for Colorado State. And obviously great for Nico Medved. As we are wrapping things up, some games to watch, a quick around the horn. Wachtel, we'll go back to you first. Anything in these conference tourney games that you've got your eye on where you're saying, hey, this could be really impactful come Selection Sunday?
Yeah, I mean, you go right to the Big East tournament. First game, the 4-5 matchup between St. John's and Seton Hall. I think Seton Hall is in slightly better shape. I think even with a loss to St. John's, Seton Hall should be in the field. I think they've done enough. I think they have enough top-tier quality wins, including beating UConn, beating Marquette. So I think they're going to be in regardless. Their situation as to where they're going to be because of their poor predictive metrics could definitely land them in Dayton if they lose to St. John's. St. John's, on the other hand, with a loss, they're in big trouble. I think they're in big trouble. And I think they need Villanova, I think, to win two in the conference tournament. Because especially if they don't beat Seton Hall. Because they only have one win against the field at the moment, and that's against Creighton. So as much as you know, we all think that St. John's should be in, the bottom line is, and like the committee always says, who have you beaten? And right now, St. John's has beaten one NCAA tournament team. So if I'm St. John's, I have to treat this game against Seton Hall like it's all or nothing. You got to treat this like it's an NCAA tournament game. Win or go home. And we'll see who shows up.
Absolutely. Evan's throwing it to you now. Anything that sticks out on the conference tourney slate that you got your eye on that you could say, hey, this could be really impactful here in a week?
I mean, nothing except impactful to my wallet that really stands out tonight. The Kansas-Cincinnati matchup in particular, guys, the one I'm most fascinated to be glued to. Without McCullough and Dickinson on the floor, you know, who's going to step up? It's going to be Jackson. It's going to be Parker Braun. Is it going to be Furphy, who had 23 points in the first matchup at Fog Allen, in which they barely got by Cincinnati in that game? They only won by five. The Bearcats still on the outside looking in. And like I said earlier, they could climb their way back at the bubble conversation, acquire another quadrant one, which would be their fourth of the season. They do have the pair of quadrant three losses, and they would extend the record in row neutral games to 5-9 on the year. So still not completely out of the at-large conversation. But, I lay the chalk with Cincinnati. I grabbed the line when it opened last night at -1. It spiked to -2.5. I would still play it at that number because I think Bill Self is packing it up, packing it in, and he's going to let the Bearcats begin to go old school House of Pain on you. And they're going to be scoring early and often because he needs his team to get right and to be healthy for what they're hoping is going to be a deep run in March Madness. But I think it's going to be a Bradley, Bucknell, Northern Iowa situation all over again. Kansas, one of the most vulnerable, higher projected seeded teams to enter the field this year. I think they're going to get bounced in round one tonight and again here in short order in the NCAA tournament.
It is truly the best time of the year. March Madness on the horizon. Wrapping things up now on Fielding the 68. I'm Facts and Children's Brad Wachtel and Brad Evans. And for our producer, Dajan Hughes, would not be possible without him. Absolute GOAT. Thank you to him as well. Thank you to everybody who tuned in, and we'll see you next time.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers. The trusted choice recommended by leading experts with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.